There is nothing worse than untapped potential. If you know that you're made for more, this is the place. I know that every successful person I've ever met has one thing in common. They do not let themselves fall victim to their circumstances. They figure out a way to rise above it. So join me on this journey where I help you to be better, do better, and have better in life and in business. If you're feeling stuck and you're needing some practical tools, some hope to get you to that better life, this is definitely the place for you. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Unstuck Podcast. I get a chance to interview author David Delisle today. And David and I really connected over our love of just being a parent and really, really helping our kids have a leg up from what we did, right? From really trying to model better things, to try to teach them better things. And we really connected over that. David, I'm so glad that you're here. Welcome to the Unstuck Podcast.
Yeah. Hi, Lachelle. So happy to be here. I'm glad we've got all the bugs out and we're working. This is perfect.
I know. Me too. David, why don't you do us justice and really kind of give us a better idea of what it is that you do and how you try to help people these days?
So the big thing, I mean, I've got two young boys that are, I believe, about the same age as your kids. I think exactly the same age as your kids.
Yeah.
So for me, really the journey started a few years back, trying to think of what I want to pass on to them as a parent and as a dad. And I realized that so much of it was around money and how I view money a little bit different than a lot of people. And that evolved into writing this children's book to teach not only my boys, but other kids about money and finance and make it fun and something they're excited about.
That's amazing. So you have a book. What's it called? I want everybody to hear it.
So the book is The Golden Quest, and you can find it on theawesomestuff.com. And that should be coming out in April, May, depending on how we're looking at with shipping and everything else. But
yeah,
it is with the printer and on its way.
That is so amazing. And tell us a little bit about the book itself. I want to hear a little bit more details as far as what age groups are great audience for the readers and what kind of story do you tell them in this book?
So what I tried to do, it didn't start as a graphic novel. It started as just these core lessons that I want them to grow up with. So in the book as well, it's not sort of dumbed down for kids, but it's in this really fun format. So it's a graphic novel, and in this fantastical world where a young boy goes on this sort of adventure to learn the golden rules of money. And on that journey, he learns that, you know, the four basic golden rules of money and what it all means, and basically grows you as the reader, grow with the child on the adventure and basically accompany him and his little dog as he goes on this great adventure.
I love that. And I want to get into kind of those four core things that you talked about in the book. But first, you know, if you could give us a little bit deeper dive, I guess, into who you are and what made you just so passionate about making this happen for your boys and then for everybody else.
Yeah, well, for me, I've always been interested in finance. So I was a little funny that way. So even as a young kid, I read finance books. And so I've been investing most of my life and really getting into the weeds and all of that, the stuff that people get bored about. So when I start talking about, they don't get excited about. So that's what I've been into. And I've always sort of loved money and finance and what it can do for you, seeing it as a tool and a means. But over the years, what I found is, because I've been doing it for so long, looking back and trying to think of like, what's really important? Yeah. What do I want to pass on? What should I teach my kids? I realized that so much of it is just noise. And it really comes down to a few basic habits and mindset more than anything else. And so that's what has me passionate about it, because I think so many people, I mean, I'm used to talking about it and people don't want to hear the details and they get bored very quickly.
Yeah.
But the reality is it's not what most people think, because it is just some basic habits habits, the way you think about it, that mindset. And it doesn't have to be this thing that feels difficult. And I think that's what has me passionate about it, is because so many people sort of have this aversion to even thinking about it. And really, it isn't something that should be difficult at all. And that's what gets me excited. And that's what sort of has me loving to talk about this with kids, because they get it. I mean, they get a lot more than we give them credit for.
Absolutely. Oh my goodness. And I think that you kind of hit the nail on the head with a lot of people. Finances can be boring, right? They're not a numbers person. They're not a details person. That would be me, in a sense of, I just am a big picture thinker and I'm a creator. And, you know, the little details of the money and the finances is not as exciting or fun for me, right? But I used to be a financial peace coordinator. And so what I recognize is that even if it's boring to get into the weeds of the numbers, what money can allow for us to do and provide for ourselves, our families, and others that we want to bless, you know, it's when you can make it into, like you did, a dry topic for some, into a fun, you know, use of our imagination and how our lives can be better, can really hit home for people that are struggling with being able to tackle the boring, in air quotes, thing that they don't necessarily want to talk about, right?
That's exactly it. And so just for any of the listeners that are thinking, I'm not a numbers person either.
Yeah.
I don't mention numbers in the book almost at all. Like, so there isn't any math. It doesn't have to be numbers. It really is understanding those habits, because you don't have to get into the weeds and all the dry stuff. So if you think about, you know, saving isn't something that requires you to know anything about numbers or math. It's just getting into that habit.
Yeah.
But what I have found that I do get excited about, so I know we will get into some of the rules, but a lot of this, I've mentioned mindset a few times.
Yeah.
And the reason I mention it is a bit of a buzzword people hear, but there's a reason that I mention mindset.
You're a smart guy.
So what I've seen is what's happening when we think about money, almost the first thing, you know, kids think of, adults think of, all of us think about is, okay, David, tell me, how do I have more money? How do I get more? How do I have more? And that's the focus. And there's nothing wrong with trying to think of money that way. And, and that is some of the habits in the book. Think about how to create wealth. But the problem with that is we never first stop and ask why we want the money in the first place.
Yes.
And that's such a bigger question and so much more important, because if we don't ask that question and we just focus on how to have more, it doesn't matter where you get in life, how much you have, you will never reach a point where you stop wanting more.
Right. Because that's all you're focused on. There's no satisfaction in any of that, right? It's just this far off place that you're in pursuit of. And so I really love that. And you've mentioned a couple of different times the mindset thing as well. And I think that when we look at the principles that you're going to get into in a moment, but when we look at just general principles that really apply to us in all different segments of our life. So I could look at it from myself being an entrepreneur and looking at it like, okay, well, what different habits are going to help me to become a better business owner? Or our kids just learning delayed gratification, and the power of saving is delayed gratification. It's the diligence that goes in when we're kids and we have to study, or when we're adults and we have to work on something where we don't feel like it. And so there's all these different amazing mindsets that can apply to so many different aspects of our life. And I literally just had a conversation with somebody today where we talked about how all of these different places in our lives, once they get into harmony, everything starts to kind of click and we get into flow, right? And we start to recognize that the way that we look at our finances is can very similar to the way that we look at our, you know, habits when it comes to taking care of our body, which includes, you know, a link to habits that we have in other areas of our life. And so when we can start to tackle some of these mindsets and these habits, it infiltrates into all of these different areas of our lives. Would you agree with that?
Yeah. I mean, there's so much to those habits and establishing them. And we want to do that with our kids on all sorts of things, you know.
Yes.
wash your hands when you come in the house, say thank you and please. And we create all these habits. But with money, it's one of those last few things that we don't like to talk about.
Yes.
And so because we don't like to talk about it, we never really teach kids, or we instill habits that maybe we learned as kids or as adults that might not be the habits we want to teach them.
Absolutely. Absolutely. No, I think that's really beautiful, beautifully said, because I think that, you know, I'm all about making an impact and influence in the world. And I think you are too, right? And I remember Mother Teresa had this famous quote, and she said, if you want to change the world, it starts at home. And when we can think of our kids as the most important influence that we can make, because they're going to spread their little ripple effects in the world, and it's just going to continue to go on in that. So how can we show up better for our kids? Like, if we can make that one of our primary goals, we can make a difference in the world, right? And I think that there's so much to be said about being a parent and taking that active role in that. And you mentioned something else that I thought was worth mentioning in the sense of we don't like to talk about money. And I find that both in families that have money and they don't want to talk about it because it can, they don't want to be perceived as, you know, bragging. And then I can have situations like I grew up really quite poor. My parents farmed and my dad was given a $1,500 a month, like stipend to live off of. Everything went back into the farm with the partnership with my grandpa. That was nothing, $1,500. And I remember my parents never talked about money other than they didn't have enough. And I remember, you know, going into high school and having the opportunity to go to a Spanish immersion trip to Mexico. And I didn't even ask because I didn't know what the situation was. I just didn't know we didn't have enough. And I didn't want to put my parents in that position. And so I think that I recognize that that money mindset has followed me into my adulthood and the scarcity of it and the uncomfortableness of it because my parents never talked about it. And so it's just an interesting thing that we have to recognize as parents to do better for our kids and to be able to recognize the ways that we have been exposed to different things like this and how it impacts all different kinds of areas of our lives. And I think that you're making this really great step in the right direction for all of us.
Yeah, well, I think that's exactly it. So even in your conversation there, you can see based on your story in your life, you have a certain story about money and feelings towards it. Mm-hmm. And money's just money. It's just a tool.
Yeah.
So those feelings shouldn't be there for the money because it isn't something, it's not a living thing.
Right.
But we think of it that way.
Right.
And those same stories. And then you've got the opposite story. Like when you started, maybe people who have a lot, they might feel shame. What, like, why would they feel shame, and why do they, and why do we not talk about it? And a lot of it really is that we don't talk about it.
Right. Yes.
So it becomes this private thing.
Yeah.
And so for me, the whole goal was to talk about it.
Yeah.
So that your self-worth isn't tied up into money.
Right.
And how you feel about yourself or others isn't tied up into money. Just trying to break down a lot of those misconceptions and just viewing it as a tool that it is.
Absolutely.
So if we're thinking of a tool, how do we work with that to make it work in our favor? And why do we have these feelings? And usually these feelings are passed down from our parents.
Yes.
So that's why when I reverse the whole thing,
right,
on the kids, instead of talking about money, like what do they, how do they have more? What do they want to buy? How much do we have?
Yeah.
Focusing on what do you really want? What's important to you?
Yeah.
And without the money, I mean, money allows you to buy those things. So it's all tied together.
Right. Right.
But what's really important to you? And you'll find it, what's so fun. And I know, you know, this because our kids are about the same age.
Yeah.
There's so much innocence with the kids that their answers are so much different than what we think.
Yes.
You know, and it's only through time and learning from us or society where it starts to change, where it stops being, you know, running on the beach or ice cream with my friends to I want to buy this thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And that was one of the things I wanted to share this with you before we get into the weeds of all of the things that you're doing with this. But so we recently had Christmas and my son wanted to take his money. He's 12. He wanted to take his money that he got for Christmas and buy a Nintendo Switch. Okay. Whatever. Fine. So we were able to kind of talk him through a couple of different options. Like, well, buddy, you can go to Target or wherever and you can get a Nintendo Switch, or we could look on Facebook Marketplace and see if anybody is getting rid of it because maybe they didn't think it was fun anymore. And so this is this price, this is this price. Which one of those sound better to you, right? So we're giving him this opportunity to start thinking about what is the best way to go forward. And if he feels very strongly that he only wants new, then that's fine. That's a choice that you're making around this, but you have the options to make that choice, right? Then, you know, he discovered that he didn't quite have enough. So I was like, all right, buddy, I'm going to put you to work then. Like, there's some things around the house that I've been really wanting to do. Like, legit, the kid was put to work. And so I'm going to sound like a slave driver here, but I've needed to wash the walls and the baseboards and around all of the like light sockets and like power sockets for too long, to be honest with you. And so I'm like, all right, if you do that with the whole house, I will pay you X amount of money. And it took him hours to do this. But the sense that we were able to talk about it, like the sense of that pride of him choosing to spend his time doing that versus watching TV or, you know, whatever, playing on the iPad or whatever. And how he felt, like the skills that he learned from doing that activity, and now he knows how to do it. And I was able to teach him, you know, certain steps and orders and giving him this pride and now giving him this respect for everything that we do around the house, because wow, like I'm going to try really hard to make less of a mess because I know how hard this is to do that. So there was a lesson in that, which was really cool. There was delayed gratification in that. And then what was really neat about this experience too, is that we had done the Dave Ramsey plan, and he had the three envelopes, the spend, the save, and the give. And we had this like jar of money that he had been saving. And I said, you know, if you want to use some of this, you can. This is the benefit. This is the payoff of that delayed gratification. This is the payoff of you setting that money aside and not spending it. Because if you had spent it all, you wouldn't have this opportunity to now have enough money to buy this thing. And so it was really cool for us to be able to, as parents, you know, bring up the conversation around money, bring up the what that money can do for him, what he's able to do to get it, how he can feel around that stuff. And just like you've said, money is a tool. It's the meaning that we attach to it where the beauty is, right? Or the pain is. And so, I don't know, I thought you would appreciate that just because our kids are about the same age. And you know, if we're willing to have those conversations and we're willing to try to bring in the lessons early on, we can start to give them the tools that they need to make the decisions and to have the habits that they need later in life.
And it's that conversation. Yeah. So when I talked about how taboo money is, it's that mm-hmm. conversation, because then you can expand on that
yep.
even more. So they understand things. So when they saw the Switch, there's a different price for it when it's brand new, mm-hmm. whether it's used. And then you can expand on that even further and show them what else they could buy instead of the Switch
yes.
with that money.
Yes.
So maybe this other thing you really wanted, or the fact that he had to work for it. Now that's in his mind. What do I like more, the Switch or all that work?
Yeah.
Or would I like this money to just grow? Or just having those conversations.
Yeah.
Because kids usually don't get it. They don't know how much things cost. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. or why, or how much we earn, or how much we spend. So the more they learn and we talk about mm-hmm. it,
yeah.
the more they can start figuring out, well, what is important to them? Where yeah. are those trade-offs? And that's why when we see something, we're like, why would you waste your money on that? But it's because in our minds, we've got yeah. all these other things we'd spend it on instead.
They yeah.
don't have that knowledge right. yet, because we don't pass that information
right.
along.
Right.
Or even knowing how expensive something is,
yeah.
it's very hard for them to know mm-hmm. the worth of something when they don't know, you know, how much we spend on gas or how much our
right.
house is or how much we earn. Like, you know, even with the Switch, like that, mm-hmm. that number doesn't really mean anything to them unless they know how it relates to everything else.
Right. Exactly. Oh my goodness. So there's so many ways we can take this conversation, but what I really want to do is get into those four main pillars that you were talking about earlier. So you guys, what we're going to do is we're going to dive into that conversation. We're going to get David's opinion and his expertise on these four main pillars of what his philosophy is. And I can't wait to hear about that and learn from that. But first I want to tell you all about something I've been working on. You guys are going to love this. My team and I have been working really, really hard to bring you something that allows you better connection. So we're all about the Better Club here, and we wanted to make it better connection. We wanted to make it more of a two-way street between you guys and us. So why don't you go ahead, listen to this brief little information, and then we're going to be back and talk to David about all of the rest of the things that we can learn from him. Hey, Lachelle here, and I just got to ask you, do you ever listen to podcasts or special training from gurus who are telling you exactly what to do, but you still have questions? Wouldn't it be amazing if you actually could ask questions to the people who are presenting to give you your personalized answer to how you can get into action and apply it to your unique situation? That is exactly why I created the Better Club Elite, which is a very special, very exclusive monthly membership that gives you access to those question and answer sessions that are going to get you into action and get you all lined up with everything that you need to start being better, doing better, and having better in life and in business. The support, the answers, and everything that you need to get you into action. So let's go. Okay, David, let's dive in. So why don't you go ahead and start with describing, first of all, what these content, you know, pillars are that you use in your book.
For sure. And again, the first rule, and this is where my approach is slightly different, and I alluded to it, is this idea of only buy the awesome stuff.
Yes, yes. We haven't even talked about that yet today. So why don't you go ahead and expand on that?
Yeah. So the idea of the awesome stuff is getting to know what's really important to you. So you mentioned your son, it was a switch. But once you start pushing them a little bit deeper, they'll start to realize what really is that awesome stuff. And it's not just kids, it's adults as well. So those things that really bring you joy and make you happy. And you can see it, because when you just even look around your room or your house, it's very easy to see the things that, you know, maybe never even had the price tag taken off and were never used or in a corner. Or those things that you've just carried on throughout the years and always bring you joy. And for everybody, it's different. And so again, this idea of taking away the motion from it, it doesn't really matter what someone's awesome stuff is. Yeah. It's the fact that they're aware. So when they're looking at something, they know what really brings them joy. And that's the first rule, trying to get this whole, the why first before the how.
So give me an idea of how you would have that conversation with your kid. Like really diving into whether or not this is the awesome stuff that they want to spend their money on.
So that's where it's so fun, because the conversation grows. Just like the whole idea of the book, it's the rules are simple, but within them, they can keep growing and expanding and getting more complex. So the first thing would be, like, you know, talking to your son, you know, what really brings you joy? What do you get excited about? What are the things you love? And maybe it will be the switch. And then you ask about that. And, oh, that's exciting. And then you can tell them what your things are. But where I talk about with it expanding, you'll start to realize that even with our kids, and especially with ourselves, we get in the habit of thinking that the awesome stuff is what we want to buy next.
Yes. Yes.
But it isn't necessarily what we want to buy next. And you can see it, because there's this desire and need for things, and we'll talk about it. And we can all think of those things.
Yeah.
But you know it's the awesome stuff because you start getting really passionate about it and really excited about it. And so, for example, if your kids start talking about, you know, I'm saving up for a trip to Disneyland, or, you know what, when we did that ski trip, or, you know, the stuffy that I got from my grandma 2 years ago, whatever it might be, you'll start seeing them get really excited versus, you know, I want this new video game. And you're like, okay, well, you don't, you know, do you really? And you can have that conversation.
Yeah.
And question yourself of what's important to you. But how I describe it in the book, the best way to think about it, because we all think that everything we buy is awesome stuff, because
that's what we do. Totally. For the moment.
For the moment. But the reality is it isn't. It just can't be, because it's all relative. It can't, like, we can't have a favorite thing or one thing. So what I'd ask them is, like, what's your favorite thing or memory or experience? What is that thing that you love the most? And they can think about it, and you can see it. And if, as a parent, you might be able to guide them, but you shouldn't have to, because we all know the one, like, it might be a Lego. It might be, you know, going to the IMAX. I mean, everyone's got their different thing, but we all know the things that our kids, like, really, really love and are into, and the things that just get forgotten. And so once you start sort of just leading them back to, well, what's that thing that you love? What's that thing you always love? And then that becomes the bar. So then when you think of the awesome stuff, now it's like, okay, how does this feel in comparison to?
Yes. That gives them context, right? And so, I mean, gosh, when it comes to stuff, we're a stuff consumed society, at least here in the States. And I feel like, you know, one of the conversations that we've been having at home is, my son is 12. He'll be 13 in April. And we've always told our kids that you have to be 13 to get a cell phone, because where will you ever be before you're 13 that you won't have access to a phone? Like, we're old school. and it's just like, he wants a phone because his friends all have phones. And it's like, but why do you want to have a phone? Like, you have an iPad. Like, what could a phone do that your iPad can't do? Well, you have a watch. You can call me if you need to. So what could a phone do that that can't do? And so, really just trying to get to the root of it is that he wants it because his friends have it. And then it's like, okay, well, do you realize that this costs this much money, and it costs this much money for us to pay for it every month? So, you know, really just at least having these conversations so that, but then, like, my daughter, she wanted a longboard, skateboard. Why did she want that? Because her and her best friend in the neighborhood love going on their they've been using his longboard, skateboard. And so it's, for her, it's more of the experience of something that she gets to do with her friend, and it's something they get to do together. And it's just, there's a different energetic level with both of those. Wouldn't you say?
Yes. And that's where, like, one isn't better than the other. Right. And that's what we got to be careful as parents, because it's so hard to not say that's a stupid thing to buy, but, but we have to be careful, because that we don't want that judgment.
Yes.
It really is the energy. It is that thing. So once you start having these conversations and you know what their awesome stuff is, then you can start looking at it as, okay, well, this phone, you could have this or this. Mm-hmm. And that other thing is, you've said, is your awesome stuff. What would you rather? And is it just because you're friends, or is that what's important? And if that is what's important, where does that lead you in terms of what's important, and where you get joy? Because it's going to be a bit of a chase if that's the joy you're looking for. And
absolutely.
And so you can start seeing those trade-offs. Is it for something else? And how much joy do you get out of it? You know, if they really like art, do they need the iPad for the art, or are they just happy with, you know, a pencil and paper? Is it the drawing, or is it the thing? And that's why these conversations, like I said, they grow, because when you first start having these conversations, they're difficult. And even ourselves, we don't always know what's important to us. Mm-hmm. But over time, just asking that question, why, like, even yourself asking your son, why do you want it?
Yeah.
What is this for? That awareness, it shifts everything, because if he's thinking the whole time, I want this and I can't have it.
Right.
And if I had more money, I could have it.
Yes.
That feeling carries on to adulthood. Mm-hmm. And it's just, it's what we find ourselves caught up in when we watch the media and watch other people, and we're chasing. And that's the whole thing I'm trying to break, is that chase.
Oh my
gosh. And so that's why having these conversations is so exciting, because then, for example, your daughter can be like, that feeling I had, like, just being with my friend and doing that, how do I create more of that?
Yes. Yes.
And that's what's really cool, because you, as they become aware, then the conversation shifts to, rather than what do you want, or what do you want to buy, or what can't you have? It's, what do you want to create more of? What is the feeling you want to create more of? What really makes you happy?
Yes.
And you're not in this feeling of lack and searching. You start becoming a bit more empowered, because you know And everyone has different things, but it will change over time. And it's fun to see, like my boys have completely different awesome stuff. And it's just neat to see what's important to each of them.
Yeah.
And teaching them at a younger age does help instill these yeah. messages a little bit better, because it's before they get caught up in buying.
Absolutely. And that brings me to something that I'm going to bring up here before we move on to the next one is, what do you do if you're a parent who is like, okay, well, great, my kids are too old for me to have these conversations. So now we feel stuck because we've missed the opportunities, or maybe we're an adult and we're like, I can totally relate to this. How can I get unstuck? Because I want people to feel like it's never hopeless, no matter where you're at. So what would you tell people in that situation?
Well, so the book is targeted towards young kids yep. in terms of just the approach. I wanted to be very easy for them to grasp.
Yeah.
But everything in the book was written for adults.
Yeah.
And there's this hope that it becomes something that we give to our high school grads
yeah.
because these aren't messages that are for kids. There is no time that is too late.
Yeah.
And so even with this awesome stuff, I mean, for yourself, for example, like if you sat on it, what do you find your awesome stuff is? And, mm-hmm. and is that where you've been spending your sort of time, energy, money?
Yeah, I would say like I'm going to use myself as an example, guys, because I'm an open book and I like my you know, weeds to be your inspiration, right? So I would say that I love to travel. I want to experience as much as I can in this world. I love the ocean. It's my favorite place to be. My awesome stuff is going on a trip and spending time in front of the water or in the water. I drive a now 10-year-old car that works just fine. Cars aren't a thing for me. And so my husband was just asking, he's like, hey, do you want to look for something different? I'm like, yeah, it works fine. Like, it's not my awesome stuff. I would rather spend my money on experiences. I'd rather spend my money on being able to cut back at work and healthcare so I can spend more time with my kids. That's where my awesome stuff is. And so I think that just to be able to give ourselves that permission at any age to think about what is our awesome stuff? What are we doing just to keep up with the Joneses, right? What are we buying? What are we consuming just to try to fit in or just to try to make ourselves feel better? But it's always a race. It's always a search. But if we can really embrace the stuff that makes us feel awesome and enjoy that stuff and try to just have more of that in our lives, it's a totally different game changer, isn't it?
And that conversation you just had, you could have with a child at any age, mm-hmm. all the way up to your grandparents.
Yep.
I mean, there is no age limit to it. And having that conversation, that again, getting back to that awareness mm-hmm. and getting people excited. So
yeah.
talking to your kids, or even talking to your teenagers or your 20-year-olds,
yeah.
hey, this is my awesome stuff. But then even taking a step further where you start talking about where in my life am I spending on something that is taking away from that? That
yeah.
isn't my awesome stuff. So it could have been, in your case, a vehicle, but you mm-hmm. mentioned it wasn't. But it's things like that where you can start recognizing yeah. where am I spending where I'm not getting that same joy mm-hmm. as I would if that was spent on a vacation.
Yeah.
And yeah. recognizing it. And in recognizing it, your kids can model that behavior mm-hmm. and start asking themselves, where am I spending, you know, both time and money
yeah.
where on something that isn't my awesome stuff, because it all takes away.
Mm-hmm.
If you're spending somewhere else, not on your awesome stuff,
right,
then it takes away.
Yeah.
And this isn't about saving to have more. It's about structuring things so your focus is on what really is important.
Absolutely. Oh my gosh. Okay. I could literally talk to you all day, David. So I want to respect everybody's time here. Let's move on to the other pieces of the puzzle that we haven't had a chance to talk about yet.
Sure. And these ones I'll try to go through fast because I know we've used up a lot of time. And again, the rules are simple. So that once that is in place and you know your why and where you want to do the focus, then I move on to the habits. And so the first habit is always save first.
Okay.
And that idea behind that is because it becomes a habit. So rather than trying to choose where to spend your money or budgeting, doing these things that are very difficult. So back to my earlier conversation when I talked about money and people don't like talking about it and it feels like work.
Yeah.
If it's a habit and that money is just automatically saved without you thinking about it, set it up in an automatic bank account or however you do it. There's a lot of ways to do it these days, even with kids. Here's your money you worked for. 20% of that right off the top goes in a jar you don't touch. Whatever you do with the rest doesn't matter so much because over time that 20% grows so quickly. That habit. And that's what I mentioned, how looking back, how much of it isn't important. That habit of saving is more important than almost anything else you need to do in terms of creating wealth.
Yes, because your feeling of awesome might change. And it might be fleeting a little bit, I'm guessing. Like, it seems awesome today, but I don't know, maybe for some it does that, I guess. So, but what if you're really trying to create this habit of saving, you're teaching yourself that delayed gratification. You're teaching yourself those habits of always creating that safety net so that you're not in lack. And I think that's so brilliant because I found that most Americans don't have $1,000 in their savings account for emergencies. And that just makes me a little uncomfortable, like, oh, because that's scary, right? We have Murphy's Law. The less money you have on hand, the more likely you are to have bad things happen to you or you're going to need those emergency funds. And so when we're teaching our kids and we're trying to model that for them early on to save first, that's brilliant. So thank you for sharing that.
Yeah. Well, and that habit, like if you aren't in the habit, trying to save, we've all tried it and we've all tried to budget and it is so difficult because another law is that we will spend what we have.
Yes. Yes.
And it's almost universally true for all of us. And the thing is if you get in the habit of doing that first, you don't feel the loss because it becomes a habit.
Right.
And so when you think of yourself 10 years ago, when you had a lot less, it's very difficult to think of where you spent the difference during those years. You just did.
I know. And the big red card at Target.
You can't help it. And so that habit, it just becomes something that's easy and you don't even notice it. So then you do, and you can continue spending what you have.
Yeah.
Because you've already done the saving. You've done it up front. So it's just, it's a habit. And with the young kids, it's so much easier for them to learn because as they, everything they get, they save, they never get used to spending more than that.
Right. That's so smart. And I think savings in general can give us this sense of satisfaction that very few things can give. I'm going to give you guys an example of this. So my husband and I decided a couple years ago that we were going to build this big shed on our property. It was an extensive project. It had a bathroom and a loft and all these things. So it you know, was a significant investment, but our goal was to do it all in cash. And so when I found that every month when I was doing our budget, I would put as much money in as I could into that savings, the shed account, the shed file that I talked about. And it was almost like a game for me to try to see where I could take out things that I didn't need to put it into that. And it was like a dopamine hit in that way versus the negative thing of saving. It was like, oh my gosh, like look at what we were able to do. And then I still look at that shed every day and I'm proud of us for the diligence and the patience and the sacrifice in some ways that we were able to do to make that happen. And it trickles in all these other areas, because when we can prove to ourselves that we can do something hard, then it gives us the confidence to do other things that would be perceived as hard. And so saving is something that is so, so powerful. And I thank you for that reminder. What are the other ones?
So next to saving is this idea of, investing. So send your money to work.
Yeah.
So that investing component, like we've all heard about compound interest, but it's very difficult to us to actually in our minds see how big that can be.
Yeah.
But if you were saving that 20% and it was in the stock market during that time and just, it doesn't have to be anything fancy. It doesn't have to be anything you even have to know about. You can just give it to a bank or a financial advisor.
Yeah.
If it was returning 10%, which the stock market has traditionally, within 20 years, that money would grow to an amount that is more than you were bringing in yourself.
Yes. That's so amazing.
When we think about retiring or abundance or wealth,
yeah,
it's the amount it grows is incredible. And we just don't recognize how much that compounding growth starts occurring. And that within that 20 years, mm-hmm. where it gets even more amazing, because now the ball's rolling, yeah. at that 10% again, every 7-ish years, your money doubles again.
Yeah.
So if you think that you've got enough in 20 years that it earns more than you're earning.
Yeah.
In another 7 years, it'll be double that.
Yeah.
And then another 7, it'll be double of that double. Like that's where it really it blows up. So starting early and getting in that habit, it can't be sort of, you can't downplay it. Even Warren Buffett, to him, that compound growth is more powerful than anything else.
Yeah.
And you see it, but you can only see it looking in the backwards mirror. But it is huge, and your kids will appreciate.
Do you guys starting that habit. Open up your statements and you show them, like, look at how much money we started with, and look at how much we have now just by investing this and letting it grow? Do you guys do that on a regular basis, just to show them that there is a payoff to this?
Right now, not as much. Like I've shown them some charts.
Yeah.
But you don't want them to look at it so closely and watch it and monitor it, because it becomes too much. Right now, I'm just trying to create the habit.
Yeah.
So they don't even, they're not even thinking about it.
Yeah, they don't even think about it. It's just something that they do. It's become a part of who they are. And that identity is huge too.
Like your son, if 20% of that money he earned that was going to go to the Switch was just put in a bank account and invested.
Yes. Yes.
That'll start growing at such a rate. If he gets in a habit of every time he does that, mm-hmm. that by the time he's getting his first job, he will see the benefits of that compound growth already.
I love that. And then do you have a fourth that we haven't had a chance to tackle yet?
So the fourth is give and you'll have more.
Ah, yes. The law of abundance.
Yes. And the reason I keep it fourth, it could come at any state, but it's almost like this idea of getting to a place where you no longer feel that lack, so that you can comfortably give and recognize that there is that law of abundance that happens. And that's where the book illustrates this beautifully, where the lesson's easy, but in the book nails that down and just shows it in practice.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I can't wait to get it. Honestly, I'm so excited for our audience to have a chance to learn about this and everything that you're doing, because David, it's so simple. And I think that what I want all of you guys to hear is that you could definitely start today and start making that positive influence on the little ones that are looking up to you for guidance. But it doesn't matter what age you are. You can start creating habits today that are going to get you to where you want to go. And so I just think that it's so practical and very much filled with hope that I am so grateful for our conversation and all the things that you were able to bless us with. Is there anything else that you haven't had a chance to talk about that you wanted to make sure to mention?
Just that idea of start with the awesome stuff.
Yeah.
Because regardless of everything else, if you don't figure out that, you'll never feel like you have enough. And that's the whole thing I'm trying to create, is this feeling of abundance for everybody.
Oh my gosh. I love that so much. David, we're going to make sure that everybody has all the access they need to follow you, to get a hold of you, to get information about your book inside the show notes, so that we have all of the ways for us to connect with you after this conversation. And I ask my audience, my interviewees every single time to give my audience a question to think about and ponder so that they can start moving themselves from where they are to where they want to be. What question would you ask the audience to start thinking about?
I mean, it sounds like I'm just a broken record here, but what is your awesome stuff?
Yeah.
I mean, really think about what is your awesome stuff and then keep reevaluating that to see how it changes.
Ah, I love it. Thank you so much for your wisdom. And you guys, thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.
Thanks so much, Lachelle.
you so much for listening to the Untucked Podcast. I am so grateful to be on this journey with you. And don't forget to check out the show notes if you want to get into my private club, The Better Club, to be able to learn better ways to be better, do better, and have better. So until next time, keep showing up. Let's get unstuck together. Have a great day.